This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
And now, your daily dose of debate, breaking news, and uncensored views. This is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. And what a great nation it is, despite the fact that one of America's most prominent female politicians, somebody who is widely considered to be a presidential possibility, if not in 2024, then 2028, sometime in the future, basically has attacked this great nation by saying that it is too bigoted to allow someone like her to achieve high office. Really? We will get to that and get to more, the latest on the teachers' strike in Seattle, which seems to be so poorly handled on every side. We'll be talking about that with the Washington Policy Center. But first, a terrific column yesterday that by Jason Riley, who only does terrific columns, basically, for the Wall Street Journal. He writes that student loan forgiveness raises a basic question about college, and it's a question about college that a lot of people don't want to hear. Not with 20 million new people going off to college coming up right now, this week. Jason, congratulations to you on the column. Jason Riley is an opinion columnist at the Wall Street Journal, where his column Upward Mobility has run all the way since 2016. He's also a senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute. So what is the basic question that you have the temerity to raise in your column about the situation with student loan forgiveness?
Well, the basic question is whether too many people go to college. We've spent a lot of time funneling as many people as possible into our colleges and universities, and the question is that a good thing to do, or should we be more discriminating about who we send off to college, who we give financial aid to, in terms of supporting higher education, and those types of questions, who we admit to our most prestigious universities. We don't really want to ask that question, but I think it is a fundamental question, and I think it's what's driving this push for not only free college, this ongoing debate, but the loan forgiveness debate. It's all premised on the notion that our policy should be to get as many people into college as possible, and I'm questioning whether that should be the policy.
You also raise in your piece something that I've talked about with my listeners a lot, is that the student loan situation, and particularly the very high percentage of students who have not or cannot pay their loans back, highlights the fact that many of the people who start in college don't finish. I think the generally used figure, and it's a figure that you cite, is that at least 40% of the people who enter college don't come out with a four-year college degree at the end.
That's correct. And that, again, speaks to whether we're pushing too many people into higher education than we should be. Because what happens to those people who don't graduate is that they're trying to pay back student debt with the earnings, oftentimes, of someone who never went to college in the first place, the earnings of someone with a high school degree. We also know that people who do poorly in college, Michael, who graduate in, say, the bottom quarter of their class, also tend to take jobs after college that earn no more than they would have for a high school graduate. So again, the question is whether this is a waste of this person's time, if they might be better off learning a trade. You know, there's nothing wrong with a vocational degree or getting into some sort of apprentice program or becoming an electrician or a welder or an HVAC technician or a plumber who makes $150,000. There's nothing wrong with taking this career path, yet we are steering everyone possible into higher education.
Do we have anything comparable in terms of federal policy offering underwriting loans, financial support to people who are undergoing vocational training? Is it any of the resources comparable to the resources we put into trying to encourage people to go to four-year college?
Not to my knowledge, no, we don't do that. But I do say we have a parallel problem of the third-party payer system problem in healthcare, and that's one of the reasons you see both healthcare costs and higher education costs rising typically much faster than the rate of inflation. Colleges know that parents and students aren't footing most of the bill, and that gives them an incentive to raise the cost of attending college, and that's exactly what they've done. And that's exactly what they will be encouraged to do if this loan forgiveness program goes through. And we have the same thing going on in healthcare, where the people providing medicines and healthcare know that the patients aren't footing most of the bill, and therefore there's no check on prices, or the check that would be on prices if third parties weren't footing most of the bill.
Yeah, I mean, again, and that's something for people to think about, because that's people who are paying, even when they're paying substantial co-pays, you end up thinking about that, which is very different from the idea that it's all going to be underwritten by either loans or grants or gifts. In terms of the argument that people make is that basically you can have a more fulfilled life. You can learn more about our culture. You can learn more about the functioning of democracy if you go to college, if you have the experience of a four-year college degree. Do you think that's oversold?
Yes, I think it's oversold to the extent that it assumes that will be everyone's experience. And again, when you look at the high rate of dropouts in college, which is far higher than the high school dropout rate, for example, that we always look at with concern, it's far higher for college graduates. So again, it's about what we need to do is to push people into college and encourage people to go to college and make college available for those who stand the best chance of getting something out of it. And we can't assume that that will be everyone. We just need to do a better job of vetting the people that go. And in fact, we're moving in the opposite direction with programs like loan forgiveness or with eliminating, you know, objective standards like the SAT for vetting who will do well in college. That takes us in the opposite direction. We should be more discriminating, not less.
And I know you've written elsewhere about how SATs and other standardized tests are actually have a record, a scientifically proven, empirically recorded record history of making pretty good conditions about people who are going to succeed or not in a collegiate program.
Yes, absolutely. They have a very good track record. And in fact, if you are someone out there who is afraid of that white supremacy is dominating and that systemic racism is a problem, then standardized tests should be your best friend. And moving towards more subjective measures is something you would want to avoid at all costs. You want to be able to go to an admissions office and say, I got the grades, I deserve to be in the school, I have the class rank, and so forth. And to the extent we're moving away from objective standards, you can't do that.
In terms of, I mean, I know you're a very proud and concerned father. One of the things that happens in this college conversation frequently, and I hope we'll have a chance to get to that, it has to do with, are you arguing about your own children or other people's children, and are there different standards? We will get to that and to more with the only one and only Jason Riley of the Wall Street Journal. His new piece on student loan forgiveness and too many people being thrown into college, a must read. And we will look forward to being right back with a further conversation about the number of graduates, which has increased far more rapidly than the number of jobs requiring college graduation, where 4 out of 10 recent college graduates actually were finding themselves working in jobs that didn't even require a college degree. Does that question their investment? Of course it questions their investment. We'll get to that and more on the MedVet Show. Washington Policy Center, WPC, is Washington State's champion for free market reforms and is nationally renowned for its effectiveness in an ideologically hostile state. It's led the effort against state and local income taxes. Its research and policy analysis are relied on by lawmakers, media, and citizen activists for accuracy, fresh perspective, and to expose the political manipulation of data. Our state needs WPC more than ever, and we need you to be part of it. Become a member today at WashingtonPolicy.org. Is our country's distinctive power and prosperity the product of some happy accidents or criminal activity, or is it God's hand on America? That's the title, actually, of my most recent book. You can get a hardcover copy, personally signed by me, together with a full audiobook, and it comes to you together with an MP3 player so you can hear it anytime you want. It's all at a reduced price while supplies last. Go to michaelmedved.com, click on the banner for God's Hand on America, look for that audiobook and hardcover book bundle.
Now's the time to join the millions of Americans who have changed the quality of their sleep with MyPillow. MyPillow is now offering a BOGO extravaganza on multiple MyPillow products. Right now, get buy one, get one free pricing on MyPillow bed sheets, Giza Elegance MyPillows, six-piece towel sets, and roll and go anywhere MyPillows, and yes, so much more. Just go to the Radio Listeners Specials page at MyPillow.com and use the promo code MEDVED. That's MyPillow.com, promo code MEDVED, or call 1-800-320-6280. That's 800-320-6280. Don't miss this incredible BOGO extravaganza at MyPillow.com. Buy one, get one free on select products. Remember, that's promo code MEDVED or 1-800-320-6280.
Complement your health with hemp-derived cannabinoid oil. We've always believed that the closer to Earth, the better it is for our bodies. Our hemp-derived cannabinoid oil is phytocannabinoid-rich, full-spectrum, and organically grown. Finally, hemp made easy, clean, and effective. GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203. That's right, we cut through the red tape. It's now available at GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203.
Are you watching your retirement savings melt away right in front of your eyes as the economy crumbles? Well, if you have an IRA, 401k, or similar account, I need to tell you about a better way that was revealed by a Wall Street Journal best-selling book. Simply put, you can opt out of the insanity and convert your existing retirement account into the most stable physical asset in history, physical gold and silver. Plus, this conversion might qualify you for an IRS loophole that could save you even more. Today, Advantage Gold is giving away a completely free audiobook version of the national bestseller, Gold is a Better Way. Just text the word better to 48542 to get your copy. That's B-E-T-T-E-R to 48542. By the time you drive home, this simple step may save the future value of your retirement. It's not too late if you're not prepared. You can take action now and claim a free copy. Text the word better to 48542. That's B-E-T-T-E-R to 48542. Message and data rates may apply.
Advantage Gold is not an investment advisor or a tax advisor.
Frustrated trying to get business capital? Want to take the slow process and rejection out of the equation? GCNLoans.com removes the slow, irritating approval process. Instead, get quick, simple funding. Powered by David Allen Capital, 80% of our pre-qualified clients are approved in days. Pre-qualify at GCNLoans.com and get your money this week. It's that easy. GCNLoans.com. That's GCNLoans.com.
On the Michael Medved Show, Jason Riley has written a terrific column that makes the case, and it seems to me unanswerable, that we have oversold a college, that we have made a gigantic mistake, and it's a $1 trillion mistake, because that's more than $1 trillion right now of unpaid college debt. And now that we're forgiving $10,000 here and $20,000 there, and then putting payback limits on how much you can be expected to pay back on a regular basis, depending on how much you're earning, with all of that, then obviously the people who are going to college now and getting financial aid will also be expecting some payback, some forgiveness, some kind of program in their behalf. Jason, what I wanted to speak to you about a little bit was just the idea of the cost differential, which is so gigantic between community colleges, what used to be called junior colleges, two-year programs, people getting an AA degree. Why is there such a gigantic difference? And I think the difference in terms of average tuition is more than 3 to 1. It's huge. Why does that difference in terms of the cost of community college versus four-year university, why does that make any sense at all?
Well, I think it probably has to do with the amount of subsidies available for these two-year colleges versus four-year colleges. And where you see more subsidies available, you're going to see higher prices. I mean, the economist, Ohio University economist Richard Vedder, who I quoted in the column, has written about this extensively, that you see the cost of tuition tracking very closely with the increase in subsidies, government, federal subsidies in particular. So I think that's probably a main driver of the difference in terms of what's going on here. But I do want to stress here, Michael, it's not just a monetary issue here. I think fundamentally what we are doing with these subsidies is encouraging people to make poor decisions about their future. People who will waste 4 years of their lives sitting in classrooms that could otherwise be spent getting work experience that could do them much better in life going forward. I mean, that's, I think, the bigger problem, and it's bigger than just a financial problem.
This also raises another item that we've been talking about. I mean, people have been looking at the divides in the election in 2020. And one of the biggest divides that even rivals some of the divides in where you live and your race and your religion is what they call the diploma divide. Why should it be that Republicans, who used to be very competitive, in fact, back in the 1970s and 80s, the overwhelming majority of people who were college graduates in this country voted Republican. What is it now that impels college graduates in such disproportionate numbers to be shifting over to the Democratic side?
Well, I think young people have tended to be more liberal traditionally, going back decades. That's just, I think, human nature to have some of these more utopian views about society and what can be done to address certain problems and so forth. I think that's just something that young people have cottoned to over the decades. I think what has gotten the Democratic Party in trouble more recently is that they've started paying more attention to this progressive, educated elite within their party, which is not the majority of their party, but they've allowed that segment to dictate the policies they want to promote. And that's being done to the detriment of those union families, a lot of racial and ethnic minority families don't share the same priorities of these progressive elites, and the party has in recent years started doing the bidding of those elites, and I think it's costing them support. And I think some of the smarter Democratic strategists have figured this out, and they've been trying to tell the party heads what's going on here, but it doesn't seem to be breaking through to them.
Wouldn't the debt forgiveness for college people who attended college and run out of college debt, it's not just college graduates, it's people who've gone to college for a little while and then dropped out, they all get debt forgiveness. Doesn't that cater to elites and, dare I say it, their children?
It does, and I think that's what's driving this. It's not economics. it's politics. And this is an election year, and I think President Biden is trying to animate young people to get out in the midterm elections when we typically don't see the rates of voting among young people that you see in presidential years. And he hopes that this will do this. And I think that is what's really driving this. This isn't about trying to reduce. I think if Biden were serious about addressing the student loan problem, he would not be pushing to forgive debts at taxpayer expense. He'd be calling for privatization of student lending. He'd support legislation that required colleges to have some to be on the hook for some money from students. That would address the real problem here, but that's not what this is really about. This is about the polls.
And what's interesting about it is that there are even Democrats who are questioning it, and particularly Democrats in tight Senate races. You look at Tim Ryan actually going out of his way to condemn the debt forgiveness program, and Senator Catherine Cortez Masto in Nevada has spoken out against it. So the idea that this is some kind of mainstream unifying force, even for Democrats in the Congress or Democrats on the political scene, is not one of those things that is borne out at all by the reaction of more moderate Democrats who are in more competitive races. Do you see the Republican chance of actually winning control of the U.S. Senate as still viable, still possible, with some of the difficulties that some of our candidates have had?
I agree with the Senate Majority Leader or Minority Leader Mitch McConnell on this. I think it is still possible, but as he's pointed out, it's not a sure thing, and it's less certain than it was previously several months ago. We're looking at the candidates that have been fielded in a lot of these races probably aren't the best candidates to win those particular statewide races, and also we have you see inflation that ebbing as an issue somewhat as gas prices come down. The abortion ruling I think has animated people on the left. You see how some of these special elections have gone. So no, I don't think it's a shoo-in anymore, but I do think it's possible. I do think it's possible, and there's still a ways to go. The news cycle moves very fast these days, as you know.
And certainly does. Jason Riley moves fast to stay ahead of the news cycle. His piece on sending too many kids to college with too much of a college for all idea is a great example of that. Meanwhile, one of America's leading female politicians, somebody who's been discussed as a viable presidential possibility, says the country is too bigoted to allow her to have a real chance. Who are we talking about? We'll get to that and more coming up on the MedVet Show.
G'day, I'm Jamel that works with Dr. Joel Wallach and the GCN team with Youngevity at teamg'day.com. By becoming an associate, you provide income for you and your family on your own hours while working from home. So contact me, Jamel, by filling in the contact box at teamg'day.com and I will get back to you personally and provide all the support you need to get started and build your Youngevity business. Teamg'day.com. Teamg'day.com.
As Dr. Wallach says, we all have nutrient deficiencies in our diets and must supplement with 90 essential nutrients in proper balances. At no cost or obligation, get a personal certified holistic health coach to help you develop a supplement program based on Dr. Wallach's recommendations. Call Linda at 833-VITAL-90. That number to call is 833-848-2590. That's 833-VITAL-90.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg. Steve Bannon is being charged with money laundering, fraud, and conspiracy in his fundraising scheme to build a wall on the Mexican border. The White House strategist under ex-President Trump received a federal pardon from him at the end of his term. Vice President Kamala Harris is in Houston to speak to the National Baptist Convention's annual session. The event is expected to bring around 20,000 people to a downtown hotel. At least 700 illegal immigrants have died along the southern border this year. That's according to the Department of Homeland Security. Texas AG Ken Paxton blames the White House and their immigration policies, which he says are encouraging people to risk their lives. The NFL season kicks off Thursday night with the Super Bowl champion Los Angeles Rams hosting the Buffalo Bills. You're listening to USA Radio News.
Extendivite testimonials on Amazon are very informative. Here's just a few. Amazon customer, 5 stars. Honestly, this stuff works. Nick, easy to take capsules. For those who can't handle the liquid drops, easy to take Extendivite capsules do the same job. Karoka Fam, works great. Like Extendivite very much. Seems to work as advertised. Thanks. Arlene, 5 stars. Love this product, Extendivite. Terry W., 5 stars. Can't say enough. Great product. Freya, 5 stars. I just ordered another. To get your Extendivite today, go to Extendivite.com. That's Extendivite.com. Or call us at 1-877-928-8822.
Extend your life with Extendivite. If you're concerned about the power grid and want to generate your own supply of off-grid electricity, this will be the most important message you'll hear this year. Here's why. We now have a small number of solar generators back in stock. These emergency backup systems provide life-saving backup power when you need it most. And unlike gas generators, solar generators run quietly, emit no dangerous fumes, and produce an endless supply of free electricity from the sun. Whether it's wildfires, dangerous weather, power grid issues, or just getting off the grid, you'll never have to suffer through painful power outages again. Even better, all this week, radio listeners get over $700 in free off-the-grid bonuses, too. Go to MySolarBackup.com to learn more and check availability. That's MySolarBackup.com. Look for the free report, Crisis Cooling, how to make absolutely sure your meat, milk, and medicines stay safe and cool in any power outage. Yours free at MySolarBackup.com.
Michael Medved Show. This is the second day of the Seattle teachers' strike. It was supposed to be the second day of public schools. And there are new questions raised by everybody, including even the Seattle Times, about whether the teachers' strike is even legal and what is it really about and what do we do to prevent this kind of disruption in the life of our community, in the life of our children. Jason Mercier is the director of the Center for Government Reform at Washington Policy Center. He's based in the Tri-Cities. He serves on the boards of the Washington Coalition for Open Government and Verify More. He was also an advisor to the 2002 Washington State Tax Structure Committee. He's an ex officio member for the Tri-City Regional Chamber of Commerce. And back in June of 2010, then-Governor Christine Gregoire, Democrat, appointed Jason as the Washington Policy Center representative on her Fiscal Responsibility and Reform panel. Jason, first of all, everyone seems to be frustrated by this teacher's strike, and there is a real question about its legality, isn't there?
Yes, thank you, Michael. I can tell you in no uncertain terms, strikes by public employees in Washington State, whether that is state employees, firefighters, police officials, and teachers, are illegal. There is no right to strike for public employees, The challenge, though, is there are no penalties specified in the law. So the law is not self-executing, which means if an illegal strike occurs, it's incumbent upon the government officials, whether that in the case of the teacher strikes, that's going to be the school board, to go to court to seek an injunction to get the schools reopened again. And what has happened time after time after time when this occurs is judges will issue the same ruling. They will say that this is an illegal strike. Teachers need to get back into the classroom, and if they don't, they'll be subject to fines.
And when's the last time that a court has done that in Washington State?
Well, in this last round here, I think we have teacher strikes right now in Seattle, potentially in Port Angeles, in Ridgeway, and then it was just settled in Kent. The districts have not yet taken the action of asking for an injunction. But in previous rounds, just a few years ago, we actually had a strike here in the Tri-Cities. It went to court, judge issued the injunction, and the schools were reopened. So it basically, unfortunately, happens almost every single year because the legislature hasn't taken the step that you'll see in other states of automatically having self-executed penalties. And the example I will give you is in Maryland. In Maryland, if a teacher strike occurs, the individual teachers aren't fined, but the union that engages in that illegal activity is subject to penalties. And in the instance of Maryland, that means they lose their right to be the union, and they can no longer deduct union dues from teachers' paychecks. And that's why you don't see teacher strikes in Maryland.
In terms of this strike, most of people have heard about how part of it has to do with resources for special education or for bilingual education. It has to do with providing more social workers, more psychologists to handle some of the students' deeper, out-of-the-classroom problems. What really is preventing some kind of compromise agreement that would send kids back to school?
Well, and this is what's a little bit concerning or troubling about this strike and these controversies. First of all, these negotiations are happening behind closed doors, so we don't actually know what the teachers' union is asking for, and we don't know what the districts are offering. It's always this, the district doesn't respect you, or the teachers are trying to bankrupt the school district, right? We don't actually get to see what is changing hands between these sides. And from a transparency standpoint and an accountability standpoint, these are public dollars. These are taxpayer dollars. And that's really, we don't allow this type of secrecy to happen in any other budget making. So just from the get-go, this is a troubling process that doesn't really allow a lot of transparency and accountability to happen. To the question that you posed, folks may not realize the issues of staffing and of base pay and basic education are set by the state legislature as part of the state budget. We have this funding process of a staffing ratio and per pupil funding. And since that constitutional challenge of K-12 funding within the Cleary lawsuit, anything that's basic education is happening at the state level. It's actually illegal to negotiate for compensation and pay for basic education at the local level. So without knowing the actual details of what's being offered and what the actual controversy is, and realizing the state budget sets a lot of this staffing and funding, it is a bit of a mystery what the issue is.
I was reading recently that they're projecting that if the school business was a business, and it is, basically people are not forced to enroll their children in Seattle City Schools, they're talking about a really drastic reduction in the number of students who are enrolled or who they expect will be enrolled. Wouldn't that be a deeper issue that ought to be investigated when people are talking about trying to fix the schools? Why are so many students dropping out or not entering the Seattle school system?
Yeah, this gets back into the fact that I mentioned we have a per pupil funding model, right? The state allocates so many dollars per students, and it gets weighted depending upon if there's special needs or English as a second language, and that's what then the districts get to fund. And as you can imagine, with the governor closing the schools for a good period of time with the COVID pandemic, I believe it was over 40,000 students statewide were no longer enrolled in public schools. They sought education and alternative means. And there was some thought, well, this is just going to be a temporary blimp. When the schools reopen, we'll see these students come pouring back in. That hasn't been the case. And the state forecasts out enrollment and going into the future years, there's a nominal increase, but it's not anywhere back to recovering what it was before the COVID pandemic. So if you are funding on a per pupil model and you are seeing, especially in the Seattle district, it looks like ongoing declines in enrollment, that does call into question that business model. And to your question, the bigger issue is parents are making the decision. They are voting with their feet that system is not right for their students. So the question is, do you keep doing what you've always done, or do you try to address those concerns of parents?
And what is your concern? I mean, overriding concern, I know in many issues, is transparency, is accountability, making parents aware of some of these decisions that are even being discussed. How could we come out of these strikes and threatened strikes with maybe some new policy that could enhance the accountability and maybe make strikes less devastating and less frequent?
Well, I think from a state standpoint, if you realize the state is the one that is setting the framework for basic education, and the state is the one that has not granted the right to strike, this public employee strikes are illegal, I think it's incumbent upon the state legislature to end this gray area that districts face every year of having to go into court for an injunction to force the schools back open when they face an illegal strike, and actually put penalties into the law, like you see, like Maryland has done, like you see in other states. If we're not going to tell public employees you have the right to withhold services, then there should be a consequence for doing so. I think that would be the first thing you would do. But beyond just on the teacher strike, just across the board, right? You have police negotiations, you have firefighter negotiations, we have negotiations occurring right now between the governor and state employees for the next state budget. All of that is happening in secret with tax dollars, and there are trade-offs to services, to costs. That should not happen, so they should provide transparency for that.
If we can talk about another issue that demands transparency, it has to do with gun laws in the state of Washington. They passed a sweeping gun law by vote of the public 4 years ago. It was supposed to bring down the level of shootings and violence. Everybody knows that it's gone in the other direction. Why? We'll get to that with Jason Mercier of the Washington Policy Center, director of the Center for Government Reform. We'll be right back. Summertime, and a lot of Americans get more active. And when you get more active, sometimes that causes some aches and pain. Neck, shoulder, hip, knee. I mean, I had a sore arm for a while, but fortunately I also have Relief Factor. And more to the point, my wife, who is always more active than I am, she uses Relief Factor as well. It is a great, wholly natural, very healthy, scientifically proven pain reliever. It is, you have nothing to lose but your pain and the whole world to gain. And right now, Relief Factor is still discounted at only $19.95 for what's called a quick start. So about a dollar a day to see if you can get out of pain in just a couple of weeks. And for the cost of a cup of coffee a day, you can get out and stay out of pain. Check it out at michaelmedved.com. Look for the banner for Relief Factor. History repeats itself, and we're seeing that play out with inflation. When Jimmy Carter took office in the late 70s, gold sold for $140 an ounce. Can you imagine? By 1980, the price of gold topped out at $870 an ounce. Now, if today's market performs like it did when Carter was in office, the price of gold could skyrocket from $1,800 an ounce to $9,300 an ounce. This is Michael Medved for AmFed Coin and Bullion. Don't miss out on a great opportunity to purchase precious metals while the prices are still stable. If history repeats itself, we'll see a run on gold, silver, and platinum that will certainly drive up prices. Be smart. Buy now. At AmFed, you're dealing with specialists who provide you with personalized attention, honest information, and sound advice. You'll never be pressured into buying outrageously priced so-called collectible coins or anything that you don't need. 800-221-7694, 800-221-7694, AmericanFederal.com.
In the 1800s, there were 160 spas set up in Europe to dispense fresh liquid whey. The sick would recover their health and the aged would become rejuvenated. There's only one whey protein powder on the market that can generate and surpass the results seen in the whey spas in Europe. But first, let me tell you the story of 90-year-old Mary, who was semi-bedridden and in hospice care. Mary had been consuming only a pea protein and pasteurized milk drink. Then Mary was put on to Green Meadow Whey mixed with raw milk. She was given 2 to 3 whey drinks per day. On the very first day, Mary was up and came into the kitchen and made chicken soup. She was on her feet for many hours. 3 days later, Mary had gained 2.5 pounds of healthy weight. Green Meadow Whey is health giving to both young and old. Green Meadow Whey is guaranteed to make you feel better, stronger, reduce your inflammation, and eliminate virtually all toxins from your body without feeling sick. To order, go to bestwayprotein.net. That's bestwayprotein.net. Or call 888-988-3325. That's 888-988-3325.
Let's face it, food shortages are a real threat now. Supply chain breakdowns, inflation, fuel prices, global conflicts, fertilizer cutbacks, farmers being encouraged not to plant. The stage is set for the peanut butter to hit the fan. But for some reason, Americans are still in denial about food shortages. Listen, we don't take risks with other things in our lives, so why take risks with your food security? Those who know what's coming are using today to prepare. Millions of Americans have purchased Ready Hour emergency food from My Patriot Supply, the brand people look for when they're ready for real preparedness. MyPatriotSupply.com is America's largest preparedness company. Get stocked up on emergency food that lasts up to 25 years in storage to get you through tough times ahead. Your other choice is to stand in government food lines hoping for a handout. As we both know, that's not an option. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com right now. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Washington Policy Center is in Olympia fighting for you wherever you live in the state of Washington. And if you don't live in the state of Washington, they're still important because what happens in this state, very high-profile state, very left-leaning state, what happens to try to bring Washington back down to a more pragmatic centrism, that is a real accomplishment of the Washington Policy Center. They sounded the alarm on the stealth income tax on capital gains and exposed emails showing that the ultimate goal was actually always a broad-based income tax. You can join WPC for as little as $5 a month and subscribe to their weekly newsletter or plan an elegant evening out, which is great fun, and come see the 70th Secretary of State. His name is Mike Pompeo. He is widely reputed to be running for President of the United States, and he's a formidable candidate. He's going to be together with filmmaker and researcher Chris Rufo, who's been a frequent guest on the show, to keynote the Washington Policy Center annual dinner taking place in Bellevue on Friday night. That's October 14th. Tickets and details are available at WPCdinner.com. That's WPCdinner.com. Or just go to michaelmedved.com and click on the green banner with a little outline of Mount Rainier on it saying don't stay on the sidelines. Click on that banner for Washington Policy Center. Speaking with Jason Mercier, the director for the Center of Government Reform at WPC, Washington Policy Center. Jason, one of the things that was sold to the people of Washington was voting on a series of gun reforms to tighten up some of the background checks and the registration and other elements of gun ownership. It was going to result in a dramatic decline in violence and violent crimes. It hasn't done that, but now there are reasons to believe that they haven't put any of these so-called reforms into practice. What is actually going on with that?
Yeah, so I think what you're referring to is Initiative 1639, which passed, I believe, in 2018. And there were many parts of that. There was some gun storage, age restrictions, the background checks. And the provision I think that the state is having the challenge with is there was going to be an annual check to make sure that owners hadn't done anything that would disqualify them from firearm ownership. And according to state officials, the reason why that part of the initiative has yet to go into effect is a couple of reasons. The first is they're not able to access the FBI's background check database. And the second is for the Department of Licensing to create essentially this registry of gun owners to conduct these annual checks. They haven't been able to figure out a way to do that on a cost-effective or efficient way. So whether or not those provisions were good parts of this original bill that or initiative that passed, that's why it has yet to be implemented. The governor said he's probably going to be going back to the legislature trying to figure out a way to comply with that requirement. But the question that you kind of posed, well, in passing this, why are we still seeing a lot of the crime issues that we are? And I think whether or not this initiative passed, if you go through an effort like we saw the past couple of years, especially in our bigger cities, of trying to defund the police and de-emphasize the protection of property rights, you get the situation where you see now in Seattle where businesses are having to hire private security to escort their employees to and from the premises, and you have a situation where now homeowners associations are having to do the same thing because they can't get a police response to deal with property crimes and other issues. So I think it's a little bit separately from whether or not this gun restriction initiative passed or not to an issue of we haven't prioritized law enforcement and property rights.
Well, that certainly seems to be clear. It, by the way, that also goes to property rights and rights to a control of your own neighborhood with the very slow pace at clearing away homeless encampments, even homeless encampments that are adjacent to schools. I know they're having a huge dispute about this in Portland right now, too. But is there anything that can be done more effectively on a state level about preventing the visible, very visible deterioration of big cities like Seattle?
Well, every city is going to prioritize how it delivers public service and what emphasis it puts on its requirements, right? What's happening right now in Seattle, I can tell you again, I'm here in the Tri-Cities, we're not experiencing that. Now, obviously, it's a smaller city. You don't have a lot of the economic pressure that Seattle has. But we also haven't put an emphasis or a de-emphasis, rather, on enforcement and protecting property rights. And why I keep mentioning that, right, we have a contract as citizens. That's why we have a government. That's why we pay taxes, is to provide those core functions that you can't get in the private sector, right? We don't want to have a bunch of private security and vigilantism. That's why you have a public police force and you enforce these protections so that citizens can be secure in their homes and their businesses, be able to get to and from school without being harassed. But elected officials have got to remember their role and to emphasize enforcing those restrictions.
Okay, in Tri-Cities, and I haven't been over to Tri-Cities for several years, but is there a current problem in any of the Tri-Cities with graffiti downtown?
Well, to be honest, we don't really have a downtown, so that's probably not going to be a good analogy. But, you know, you are going to have problem spots in every city, and that's going to be true of the Tri-Cities. I guess the distinction I would make with what we see here versus in Seattle is when we have a problem spot, the city council and the police department prioritizes patrols and enforcement to try to address it. You know, we actually passed several years ago a public safety tax. And people don't think of Eastern Washington as supporting tax increases, but we did this because we wanted to get ahead of a gang problem we were seeing in other cities. And that has effectively, by prioritizing those two, law enforcement and public services, we have thus far been able to avoid that.
Well, which, again, is a remarkable connection between tax policy and actually some of the problems that people actually care about, that government is charged to deal with. In terms of the political future in Washington State. Can there be some advantage, you think, in the future of using the jungle primary system that we have now to actually make this more of a two-party system in the state rather than the one-party control that we seem to have had recently?
Well, I think with the top two primary, what we have seen now, it happened with the treasurer's race a few years ago where none of the Democrats made it through and there were two Republican candidates. And now this year we're seeing it with the Secretary of State race where it's going to be a Democratic candidate and independent, but none Republicans. I think when you've got this type of top two, it requires some discipline for the Democrats and the Republicans about the candidates they put out there. Because if you have many candidates, you run the situation where your party may not even be on that general ballot. So that kind of gets to a little bit of, it's a good opportunity for a lot of voices to be heard, a lot of options for voters, but it will start to force the parties to be a little bit more disciplined in the candidates. But when you're not, you see what happens here where, with the Secretary of State, at least now, there's not going to be a Republican candidate, just like several years ago there wasn't for the treasurer's race for the Democrats.
Yeah, I mean, again, this is a very, very good point. I mean, it's one thing we're going to talk about tomorrow, is that partisanship really does involve having a party that has a viable voice and commitments to that party's self-interest, not just to the advancement of individual candidates or candidacies. State of Washington coming up, do you think that there's going to be a lot of excitement about the U.S. Senate race coming up in this state?
You know, you do see a lot of different polls on that Senate race right now, and I think that, for better or worse, it's probably going to be a nationalized race. Usually they say that all politics is local, but what we've seen happening with the former president, a lot of things have gotten nationalized. So it's just going to be a matter of how much can be on the candidates versus the national debate.
Look, I believe that you're right about that. And there is more national attention all of a sudden being paid to Tiffany Smiley and her very strong challenge to Senator Murray. Jason Mercier, director of the Center for Government Reform at Washington Policy Center. You can find out more about his work and about the issues, including the issues behind this current teacher strike. Go to michaelmedved.com, click on the banner for WPC Washington Policy Center, and join them on the annual dinner in Bellevue, October 14th, in this greatest nation on God's green earth.
Fred Dreyer here for a product I use and love, Balance7.com. Are you suffering with heartburn? Get relief from Balance 7. Most people are able to go back to eating the foods they enjoy with Balance 7. Please don't be stubborn. This really works. You're just a sip away from enjoying the foods you like. Try Balance 7 with a money-back guarantee. Do you suffer with joint discomfort? Getting out of bed in the morning feeling how stiff your body is and wondering how bad is it going to get as the years go by? Try Balance 7. It reduces the acid buildup in the body. In 3 days' time, you will feel a great improvement. Getting older doesn't have to mean it has to get worse. Use Balance 7. Go to Balance7.com or call 800-793-9039. That's 800-793-9039. Mention the code word FRED and get $10 off your order. Call 800-793-9039 and mention the code word FRED. Get heartburn relief and more with my favorite, Balance7.com.
Get healthy, not high, with 100% pure CBD powerful natural pain relief from Veterans Vitality. GCN listeners, have you ever thought about how CBD may help you? I'm sure you have heard about the many benefits of CBD. Well, here's your opportunity to try before you buy. Created by veterans and for everyone who deserves better choices, our CBD is derived from organic hemp, grown in the USA, and third-party tested. Veterans Vitality CBD saves you as much as 25 to 50% over our competition, and a portion of all sales is contributed to veteran nonprofits and events. Many of our customers have experienced improved quality of life, help with anxiety, PTSD, and overall well-being. Our products do not contain THC. They are safe, non-addictive, effective, and 100% legal. GCN listeners, get your free trial bottle of premium CBD by simply paying shipping and handling at GCNFreeCBD.com. That's GCNFreeCBD.com. Again, GCNFreeCBD.com. Offered by Veterans Vitality Premium CBD.